The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. You are joining We the People Radio. Every Sunday, streaming and chatting worldwide at KCNR 1460. To find out more about our guests today or any show that we've ever done, go to wethepeopleradio.us. You are joining your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our producer and musical savant, Bob Martin. Good morning, you guys.
And all-around good guy.
He's awesome.
good morning, Elizabeth.
We love him. Good morning, Aaron.
I'm feeling the love. Good morning.
Good morning, John Boy.
Yes. Yeah. And the feeling's mutual.
So lots of stuff going on in the news, and today we're going to talk about the Third and Fourth Amendments and how they're being desecrated across the United States. But before we do that, we'll do our normal chit-chat. And I do want to give a shout-out to some friends that I met yesterday. The shout-out is specifically for Bill in the other room because he hates that word. So, of course, I use it.
I need a pen, Willis.
But I went out to the... to the Tuscany Lavender Festival yesterday in Whitmore, and if you are in the Shasta County area and have ever been to Whitmore, it's absolutely beautiful there. And there was a lavender festival at the Tuscan Lavender.
Okay, help me out. What is a lavender festival?
Well, there's a farm.
Y'all wear purple, or
some people did, but it's there's a business out there. It's a lavender farm. And they had a wonderful event out there yesterday. They had music, and they had wine tasting, and they had vendor booths, and they, of which I was one, you know, demonstrating damsel in defense. And there were...
So you got to shock people?
I didn't shock anybody because that would cancel my insurance, but, you know. So, no, I'm not allowed to do that. And my husband went with me, and many people asked if he would...
Do the demo?
Yeah, and he wouldn't do it either.
I was totally going for that, too.
But, how else are you going to demonstrate the product if you can't shock people?
I know. They're just going to have to take our word for it, I guess. But I have a new friend out there, Teresa, and Teresa kind of runs the place, and it was a fabulous event.
She's in charge of all of Whitmore?
No, the Lavender Farm.
Oh. I have a little back problem. I didn't even take the pain pill yet. I was thinking about taking later, which will make me a complete idiot.
I'm so glad.
I'm just gearing up.
So anyway,
coming up in hour two, Aaron on painkillers.
So the Lavender Heights Lavender, it's Tuscan Heights Lavender Gardens, and you can go out on the weekends, take a picnic lunch, wander through, cut your own lavender. They have a wonderful gift shop. They've got all kinds of stuff going on out there. So just wanted to let people know if you haven't, you know, because we're all about entrepreneurs and free markets, and you know, when you discover these wonderful little hidden secrets and people doing successful things, you want to spread the word.
That's cool.
So check it out, you guys.
Now, have you explained damsel in defense to our listening audience yet?
Well, you know, I haven't, but I will if you want me to.
No.
Well, you know, we all know about California AB 109, the increase in crime. We've all seen it. Anybody living in California has seen this increase. And I was approached, actually Erin called me, and she said, I got a phone call from somebody that was looking for a rep for a company called Damsel in Defense, and they have a really great product line of personal safety items. And they kind of trick them out a little bit to gear them towards women, but certainly men could use them too. And I kind of jumped on it because I have had a passion for personal safety. And so anyway, it's a great company, and again, you know, a great entrepreneurial endeavor by a couple of young women in Idaho. And you know, I'm a big fan of women-owned companies, and I'm a huge fan of coming up with an idea and doing your own thing and bringing other people into the mix. So they're doing really well.
That is
it's a very fun. It's a very cool company. And so I went out there yesterday to the Lavender Festival and set up my booth and displayed the products. And, gosh, I talked to so many women. And it was wonderful, all ages. It was fantastic.
Nice.
I had a really great time.
Well, that is, you know, anytime you discover, you know. Okay, would you find the place if you were just driving, or you'd have to actually go there on purpose?
Yeah, you'd have to know that it was there. because it's very well hidden, which of course is what makes it kind of special. And it's like it's got a real feel of Tuscany. If you've been to Europe or to Italy like you and I have, it has a real Tuscany feel to it, and it's off the beaten path a little bit, although it's not, you know, it's a paved road. It's a beautiful, beautiful drive.
Nice.
It's real easy to get to. So anyway, I encourage people to go to their website. It's Tuscany Heights Lavender Farm, and it's a real treat. I mean, it's a treat. It's just one of those really simple things. Saw tons of tea party people out there yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Saw a lot of people. It was fantastic.
The tea party was out there decompressing?
I don't know what they were. They were having lavender. They make a really great lavender lemonade, and they sell all this stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Essential oils and really nice, chemical-free, all-natural insect repellents and all kinds of things. It's really neat.
So they were out there decompressing.
I think they were.
You know, a week of stress. And
so it was, you know, there were enough people, but not too many. It was almost like a private party that you were invited to.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, you know, we talk about about We the People Radio. We talk about everything under the umbrella of fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution. And I really think that small business fits under that umbrella. And I'm the first one to encourage people to check these places
out.
It's
the free back in free market.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes, turn mic on, Bob. We wish you luck with your new endeavor. You want to give the website for Damsel in Defense?
Oh, yeah. Let me pull it up. If you are interested in having any of the products there's a real insurgence in these personal protection parties that you have in your home. I think people are tired of doing the corporation thing. They're kind of getting to where they want to get back with their friends and have small gatherings in their homes and try things and have a personal
the Tupperware business model.
Well, it basically is, mm-hmm. but it's gaining in popularity again. So I'm going to pull up the website.
I don't think it actually ever went out.
It might not have, because you were involved in something like that for a long time.
There's tons of stuff like that.
Yeah, there really is.
Person-to-person marketing is huge business.
It is. And so the website is www.mydamselpro.net/pro2157. That's my number, pro2157.
So if they just search Damsel in Defense, could they?
They won't find me unless they type in my number. Or you can do www.mydamselpro.net/Elizabeth Woodward.
Okay.
Same thing. That'll take you to my website.
We better put that on our website. Then they can find it that way, because that's kind of long.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Nice.
So anyway, but just wanted to give a shout out to Lavender Farms and Bill.
Just so we don't miss anything.
And you said you had news.
Yeah, and we're not talking about how George Zimmerman's not guilty, because frankly nobody cared.
Yeah.
And anyway, the world didn't fall off the edge. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, all the predicted. Anyway.
Sure.
Okay, check that off the list.
Yeah. Okay.
Watch that happen. Hey, Farm Bill.
Let's talk that.
I'd bring up the Farm Bill just because there is so much misinformation about the Farm Bill. It's amazing, you know? People have always complained that the Farm Bill has food stamps in it. Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
So people are furious about that.
Right.
So the House worked, you know, tirelessly to put a farm bill together that doesn't have food stamps. It's just about farming, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Okay. So direct payments are eliminated and no payments are made to those who don't farm. So all the Hollywood types and people who own farmland.
Sure. Yeah.
But who really have never put in a crop and don't intend to, have gotten huge subsidy payments.
Yes, they have.
For doing zip.
And they get payments and subsidies for being in Hollywood. It's amazing.
Yeah. So just for, you know, that's out and no direct payments. Traditional farm policy is cut by $23 billion, which is a 36% reduction.
Wow.
Now, mind you, the Heritage Foundation opposes this.
Okay. And why is that?
I think they're just knuckleheads. They also say Agenda 21 isn't real, so, you know, take everybody with a grain of salt. The bill ensures a reliable food supply, stable consumer prices for Americans without fluctuations due to federal policy. Crop insurance policies require farmers to have more skin in the game and only provide assistance in the event of a natural disaster or a market crash. So all this whole idea that people are going to get paid higher than market value, like, for instance, you know, they're always after our congressman because they say, oh, he's going to make all this money, you know, the differential between the crop insurance and what it costs to grow. Yeah, well, it's below the cost to grow. So, like, we can kind of get that off the table. Prohibits the EPA from implementing the unjustified and unscientific biological opinions of the National Marine Fisheries Service until there's an unbiased scientific peer review of those opinions.
Nice.
Which is sweet, because we all know how that's worked out. Requires regulatory agencies across the government to use scientifically sound information moving forward with their regulatory initiatives. And requires the Secretary of Agriculture to advocate on behalf of farmers and ranchers as other agencies move forward with regulation. So the Secretary of Agriculture would have to actually be on the farmer's side, which would be lovely. And it eliminates a bunch of duplicate reporting requirements for seed importers.
Okay.
So just like a few of the highlights.
Yeah, and this is the House bill.
Yep. Bottom line is it's H.R. 2642.
So do your homework. Do your homework and don't spread rumors.
Yeah, well, you know, like Heritage sends out this thing, you need to melt the phone lines, you know, these guys are... So, you know, if a 36% reduction and it's not even discussing the food stamps yet, it's just the farm part, you know, at some point, they worked on it before they left last week. They worked on it until like midnight. So then another email came out, under the cloak of darkness, they were sneaking around, and I'm like...
Oh, geez.
How about they stayed like till midnight to vote on it? I don't know. Anyway, it was funny. I've got some other fun stuff that may be coming up.
We've got Stephen Greenhead on the line.
Oh, okay.
And I know that he's limited in his time, so
my last thing here.
Okay.
But I think people will care about it because people are concerned about the travel management plan.
Absolutely.
And looking at what we can do. Well, there's kind of an appetite in the House, big one, in appropriations.
Oh.
To go after it through appropriations.
Nice.
To make it so they can't, the Forest Service can't use their funding to close roads.
Excellent.
And wouldn't be able to use their funding to enforce, fines on people who are on closed roads.
Mm-hmm.
So, can kind of keep an eyeball, open for that.
That's big.
It's more than one way to get to this stuff, so. Anyway,
okay.
There are some good things going on regardless of what you don't hear.
And
in
thank
the media.
You for sharing that. And for those of you that don't know, Erin is a field representative for. She's got the skinny on the info.
Yeah, I work in that industry.
Yeah.
And the Army Corps, they actually did pass a thing on the Army Corps that they can't force farmers to get a 404 permit to farm.
Nice.
So all this, every tiny little puddle is a waterway.
Mm-hmm.
So the Army Corps enforces it.
Well, yeah. Exactly.
This stuff's all being dealt with, so regardless of
what people think, nice.
You should look into it. If this affects you or people that you know and care about, you ought to look into it because there's more being done than you might hear.
Nice. So, Bob, do we need to take a quick break?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Yes, Stephen Greenhut is standing by.
Nice. All right, we're going to thank our advertisers really quickly. Come back. Stephen Greenhut will be with us, and we'll march into the Fourth Amendment because there's plenty of material there. Be right back with you. You're here at KCNR, 1460 AM, community radio for the North State, and there's something...
I see Homeland Security is still messing with my bumper music.
Something bad going on with the Carly Simon.
You heard it.
And we're back. We the People Radio.
Oh, I should have hummed a few bars.
That's all right.
A little computer
problems.
That's
all right. You're joining Erin Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, Bob Martin, and we're going to jump right to Stephen Greenhut. We're going to talk a little bit about the militarization of our local police forces, and there was an article by Radley Balco in Salon that talks about the overwhelming paramilitary force that is on the rise in the United States. And very quickly, if you go to wetthepeopleradio.us, you can find out everything about Stephen Greenhut. But currently, he is the vice president with the Franklin Center, and he is... Hello? Oh, yeah. And he just is starting a new position on July 22nd as a Sacramento-based California columnist for the Union Tribune in San Diego. So are you in there, Stephen?
I'm right here.
Hey, thanks for hanging on. Yeah, we can hear you. Hey, listen, we've got this article in Salon, an online magazine, and they're talking about the rise of paramilitary force in the United States, and you were quoted in the article as being a little bit disappointed with the position that the right has taken in siding with the police. So what's your take on this?
Well, first, it's Radley Balco. It's from his new book, Rise of the Warrior Cop, which I haven't read yet, but Radley's an excellent reporter and been covering these issues for a long time. And I think he quoted from a piece I had written after the pepper spraying of the occupiers in Davis. And I had, naively expected that people on the right might have, been sympathetic with the protesters, even if they don't like what the protesters are saying, because this whole police militarization issue has been, I think, is a big issue that affects everyone on the left, right, everywhere. I see it everywhere. I saw it in my years of writing at the Orange County Register. I still do a column for the Register, and I used to report down there on the editorial page, and it became just a major issue, constant, where police take a highly militarized approach to everything and shoot people that I can't, I've got to see a lot of these cases up close and personal and deal with the police and the sheriff's department and the DAs, and it's unbelievable. And it's scary. So anyway, I had, he quoted me from a piece I wrote about how inconsistent conservatives are. They could find themselves on the receipt just as easily, and have many times, by the way, found themselves on the receiving end of these sorts of things. And there were So anyway, I that's what he quoted me from. It was a piece I wrote about that.
Well, we're just, I mean, anybody who's watching, it really struck me in Boston. That That really, I watched people get just pulled out of their own houses. You know, knock, 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 we're looking for the terrorist. All right, get out with your hands up and stand on your front lawn. And I'm thinking, what?
Well, and there's a real increase in police, local police forces, shooting people's dogs.
I know, that's a biggie too. Amy brought that out in the article.
Huge.
He said, yeah, if you want to really get people involved, shoot their dog.
Yeah. So
yeah, there's a big case. People are protesting, I think, down in Hawthorne over a case, and the LA County Deputy Sheriff, the Sheriff's Department had issued a new policy. It's been happening so with such frequency. I think what happens is police go on these calls, and they're all ramped up and being extremely aggressive, and they can shoot a dog without any problem at all. I covered one of those in Costa Mesa where the officer claimed that the dog, this is just typical. Okay, the police officer sees two teenagers riding their bicycles without helmets. So he goes up to them and they ride away. So he chases them into their backyard, pulls a weapon on the kids, and then the dog comes out and starts barking like crazy. So he shoots the dog, and then the officer claims that the dog attacked him, but he threw away his pants and his belt where the dog supposedly bit him. So this is modern policing.
And the sad part is that it seems to be that regardless of what severe action police forces are taking against ordinary citizens, they never really seem to be held accountable. I really do believe they protect their own.
Yeah, that article really pointed that out. All the different things that happened, and it was kind of like, oh, well, this is the price of safety.
So why do you think it's on the rise, Stephen?
Well, I don't know. First off, on that issue, I never see accountability ever. I mean, on these cases, it doesn't matter how heinous. You have a variety of things. There are all sorts of, police will say that they are, they have all sorts of oversight. And it's true that there are all sorts of panels and oversight type of, procedures, but none of them provide real oversight. And, because they're all run by each other. So for instance, a case, I was, writing about in Orange County, with our sheriff, Mike Corona, who now, by the way, is still serving his 6-year federal corruption sentence. So anyway, but there was a guy in a jail, and he was beaten to death, tortured, and murdered for 50 minutes right outside of the guard station. And this is in a jail. So there's not like you could. Something like this could happen without anybody noticing. Well, the sheriff's deputies and their deputies who patrol the jail in Orange County, they said they didn't see what was happening because they were watching television, sleeping. So, which is not very encouraging in and of itself. But it took, what seemed likely
that's
happened,
another story.
What seemed likely happened, it was they knew what was going on, probably, allegedly, and put, you know, the shot callers in the jail up to beating this guy, and they got carried away and they killed him. So then the district attorney, who is fairly worthless and very much of a supporter of anything police did, he finally puts out an investigation, a report about it, and it was just outrageous. The internal affairs investigators were coaching the accused police, the accused deputies, the all manner of corruption. And what happened? Nothing. Nobody was prosecuted. A few people, retired. And then they're not allowed to tell us what the discipline is, thanks to a variety of laws and a Supreme Court ruling, the Copley decision down in San Diego. So any sort of police disciplinary action is just considered an internal matter. We have no right to know whether your local police officer has shot multiple people, has been accused of all sorts of wrongdoing. But the reason for this, so this is completely typical, even in a heinous situation like that, a torture murder, where the police officers admit that they were goofing off, and where the district attorney finds that there was actual corruption, nothing happens to these folks. And in many times, it's true, I see they get promoted after they're, accused of wrongdoing. It's kind of the police department's way of saying, we don't care what you think. I mean, in a case in Fullerton, Kelly Thomas, the homeless man, was beaten to death by police officers. It was all caught on video. It's a horrifying thing. The police were allowed to watch the video and get their story straight before testifying. And this was before the video was released. So this is the kind of every manner of excuse, privilege, every sort of thing that any normal citizen is not allowed to have. So this is the way it works. And then the culture of police departments, they protect one another. They have a paramilitary view of the world, and they protect each other. And the culture encourages it. Another case I reported on, this is also in Orange County, because I was, down at the register, so that's why a lot of these are from Orange County. There was a guy, he was being prosecuted by the DA, a deputy, for torturing a guy with a taser in the back the guy was restrained, he's in the back of the police car, and he was repeatedly tasering him. And the guys in the locker room were laughing about that. The other police officers thought that was funny, and that's how the DA got wind of it. He prosecuted it. They got the deputies one at a time, and they told them what happened. Then when they got to the case, everybody changed their story. So this is absolutely, completely common. The other thing is, most of the things that are so horrific in the Bradley Barco article and some of the things I've written about that are so horrific, police shooting unarmed people, raiding the wrong house, killing dogs, whatever, none of that's illegal. So the way the law is if the police in any way believe their life was in danger, they're allowed to use deadly force. So there's not even anything to do to discipline them, because the law is written in such a way that they could do anything they want. They could break into your studio right now and say they got a tip that, you were going to do something. So, and they shoot you, and they say, well, I thought, when she reached for that pen, I thought she was going to kill me. And then that's the end of it. There'll be an investigation, and they'll be cleared and back on the street, probably promoted.
Okay, this is more than frightening.
Well, so there should be a happy balance somewhere in this, but as we're letting out more, especially in California, letting out more prisoners, as all this stuff is ramping up, the tools of the trade are getting more more military style too.
Well, it's true. Let's look at why. First off, why are they releasing prisoners? Because Jerry Brown is so cozy with the police unions that with the prison guards unions that he refuses to do some of the things that would would allow us to, you know, there's so many people in jail there for drug offenses and things they shouldn't even be there in jail for, right? I mean, we have in prison, we have so many, you know, crimes that shouldn't even be crimes.
And the problem is they come out with more knowledge on different types of crimes.
Well, right. I mean, is it sensible to put, you know, drug users in jail, but all these mandatory minimum sentences and then, you know, three strikes, which, you know, we're all for putting really bad people away. But, you know, take a look at some of the strikes that have landed people in jail. Prison, I'm sorry. If you take a look at that, I mean, you start filling up the prisons with a lot of people who shouldn't be there. And, of course, it costs in California almost $50,000 a year per prisoner, which is the highest in the nation. And you've got the Prison Guards Union, which has historically lobbied for more of these tough on crime type of sentencing deals. It's good for business. And Jerry Brown, who's you know, rather stand down, pretend he's George Wallace, and stand in a cell, standing down federal judges than impose the kind of reforms that are necessary. But here's, you know, there's a case right now going on in Henderson, Nevada, where I think Balco refers to this, where, it's probably not in the book because this just happened, but anyway, I think he's written about it. A police came and commandeered these people's house. They came in and they insisted they came and took over the house so that they could watch the neighbors in a domestic dispute. So you were talking before about Fourth Amendment. Well, this is a Third Amendment, right?
Wow.
Drawing and quartering soldiers, military are soldiers, you know, in the houses. That's outrageous, right? I mean, I find that to be just unbelievably outrageous. And you know, I saw Balco was just this morning, I was looking online, and he had a piece where on Salon also where he said when police get SWAT teams, they want to use them. And I remember did an interview at the in Orange County again. There's the county jail where all this horrible things happen, and including the John Chamberlain murder, which you could, you know, read about that on your own and look up the DA's report. But right next door is the Santa Ana City Jail, and the city jail houses just as difficult prisoners as the county jail. And the city jail, they even have, you know, Mexican mafia members and all, because they contract with the feds for some pretty tough prisoners. And the city jail is run more like a community college. I went in, you know, when you go in the county jail, it looks like something from, you know, one of those bad prison break movies. And you go into the city jail, and you think you're in a kind of cheap community college. That's what it looks like. There's one officer surrounded by often a female and always unarmed officer surrounded by inmates there. And it's one of the least threatening environments I've ever seen. And, it's a privatized jail. It's run not in the traditional manner. And they've had very few disturbances. I think only one in the history of it. And the guy who runs it was telling me that they do not have a SWAT team at the jail, and that the one time he was at a place where they had a SWAT team, they used it within the first few hours that they started it, the jail version of a SWAT team, I forget what it's called, because that was his point, that when you give them all this equipment and you train them to be militarized and you create a SWAT team, these guys can't wait to use it. They want to do that. And that's, I think, what's happening. Every community is getting a SWAT team, and the officers, the departments are eager to use those SWAT teams. And this is pervading the whole mentality. The day of the community cop is over. I mean, I tell my kids, I said, you beware of police officers. I mean,
and
you
how
know,
sad is that? You've got criminals on one side, and you've got police force on the other side, and we're all stuck in the middle, and we can't trust any of them.
I find the police are far more terrifying than many of the criminals, mm-hmm. because they can do things with impunity that I've seen. And it's just terrible. I mean, obviously we want to deal with serious criminals, but
well, you know, you live in a police state when you see a police car behind you and your heart stops beating. And instead of seeing a police officer as a friendly person who's going to assist you as a public servant, you view them with fear.
Well, it's true. You know what? And I'm not, you know, ever defending criminal behavior at all, but a lot of times, why do you think some of these, you know, young inner-city teens, when they're stopped by a cop, why do you think they run?
Sure.
Because they know what's happened to some of their other friends where they're stopped by a police officer, and then they run, and then the police shoot them, or they, you know, I don't know. I've just seen, there was one case, and I could go on. You can see I wrote quite a few of articles about this case in Huntington Beach where a young troubled girl with a small knife was in an empty park at like 4 in the morning and surrounded by officers. So they riddled her with bullets. They shot her to death. These kind of things just happen over and over, and nobody wants to so there's some discussion about whether the police committed a crime after these things happen, like the one in, these cops in Fullerton are being prosecuted for beating to death Kelly Thomas, which is a rarity. They never, very rarely get prosecuted. But nobody wants to talk about the terms of engagement and when it's appropriate to use force. And if you look at the police officers, how they dress and how they behave, increasingly, you don't see that kind of community officer. You see this very militarized figure, and you see this everywhere, right? You see it at even when there's no real disturbance, when you're at a July 4th park event, and you see police lined up in their SWAT type gear everywhere, and that's the kind of stuff that really makes me feel like we live in a police state.
Now, so Stephen, in any local community across the country, how does your local police force work with the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, any of these other agencies that might have local offices? Do they work together? Do they work against each other?
You know, I've not been involved in how the specifics, how the interactions work. I know, I do think that one of the arguments, I've made and others have made is that increasingly local departments are getting equipment. We see that. They're getting, a lot of the policy is probably driven from the federal government anymore. And that probably explains some of the behavior and the rules come. I think there's more involvement than there had been perhaps from the federal government, but I can't speak to how exactly it works. I mean, I know, you have all these interagency deals and all, but I do know that the attitudes of the average police officer are far different. There's this sense that it's us against them, and we're the them, and that at any minute they a really good person to talk with or to read is Joe McNamara. He's the former San Jose police chief, former Kansas City police chief. He was the guy Giuliani wanted to be the police chief in New York. He's now at Hoover Institution at Stanford, so a highly credible person. And he talks about how militarized the police have become and how they've increasingly exaggerate the danger that they face, and that's kind of the justification. And then you combine that with this, after 9/11 and some, I think, the overreactions that so many of us, so many Americans embraced after about terrorism. So that this is where we are. I have no idea what you do about it. We also see it at other levels. This is I go down to the American River to just take a raft ride, and there's a park officer armed searching our things to make sure we don't have beer. In my day, you should have been a requirement to have beer when you're floating on a river.
Exactly.
I go into the
park. Our beer had its own raft.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's what it's going to be. I go into the post office in downtown Sacramento, And it's a federal building above it, so you have to, it's like going into the airport. You've got these surly guards there, and you have to put all your stuff through the x-ray machine in order to buy a stamp. And I'm standing next to a guy. He goes on the wall in this Soviet-esque looking post office. He goes and takes a picture of the Constitution, and the guards go and they go and they harass him because he's taking a picture in this building. And he thought it was ironic. He's taking a picture of this Constitution and being harassed mm-hmm. for doing that. And but that we're just getting used to that everywhere we go. You go to parks, you go to police. I saw a police officer in downtown Sacramento on horseback chasing down and really rousting a guy who jaywalked. So. Just think about what our society would be like if all our laws were enforced.
It would
be a police state. So I don't know. Something needs to be done. I'm going on and on, but
no, that's all right. That's why we called you. Well,
but at the Capitol, though, the police unions they control. I mean, they're certainly among the most powerful forces up there. And I've been in hearings where there's efforts to open some of the records of misbehaving police officers. It's just never going to happen. The Democrats and the Republicans are completely, they love unions and the Republicans love law and order. So we're stuck. We're stuck with this nonsense.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting because there are more and more. We linked one of them for a 4th of July DUI checkpoint where I think it's a young guy, I mean, it's kind of a kid, has a camera on his, probably like the armrest in his car, or maybe sitting on the passenger seat, and he doesn't roll the window down very far.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop's like, roll your window down. He goes, I can hear you. Did I do something wrong? And the guy's like, roll your window down. And it just escalates into this ridiculous confrontation mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. he didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There are tons of
those. That's what I see these days. The police, instead of they almost want a confrontation. And again, when I speak of this, obviously there are many who do not, and many officers who behave well and responsibly. But the fact is, the culture has changed, and the policies have changed, and it's become much more bureaucratic, and much less leeway, from what I see, for the officer to be human and humane. And if the person gets within 11 feet of you, you can do this, and you can draw your weapon and do that. It's very bureaucratic, and I do think they hire an increasing number of officers who want to ratchet things up. I've seen it myself, and in situations I've been in, perfectly innocent situations, how the police have behaved to me, and it's pretty frightening. It seems as if their goal is to get me as mad as possible so that I can act out, so that they could. Then use force. That's what it seems like.
So it used to be that you got into, you wanted to be a police officer to help your local community, the one you grew up in, and now you join if you want to be a tough guy.
Yeah,
and you want
obviously.
That big pension. You want the big pension, too.
Oh, yeah, there is that. That's another show.
You know, obviously, our sheriff's office is the, is mm-hmm. the linchpin on this mm-hmm. whole thing. Because the ones that are really militarized, it isn't so much city police that I see that are really throwing their weight around, but out here, what we see is Forest Service cops and the
fishing game.
Yeah, and that's gotten a lot better, actually, mm-hmm. in the last couple of years. That's actually kind of become a little bit of a non-issue, just because they have a good boss who, mm-hmm. Keeps things in line. But, different agencies that are really, they want to be law enforcement, but they really... aren't?
Yeah.
Well, they are increasingly, and that's the other thing we see is laws, they're continuing pushing laws to give, like in one that passed gave code enforcement officers the power of peace officers, different things. So many of these agencies, university security guards are not security guards. They're legal police officers in the state of California. So there's this ratcheting up of powers and police powers and protections. But I think the point you made was that, under good leadership, some of these issues, can be dealt with better. I mean, I think a lot of the problem is, a cultural problem. And somehow, and it's driven by laws, a lot of them federal and state laws, and special protections. and a cultural issue. So what I basically am calling for is just more, you know, a cultural change. And the best way to start is to discuss these issues and the proper use of force and the proper behavior of community officers who are, in fact, they're not military. They are civilian officers who are meant to patrol our communities. And there has been pushes for, you know, community policing in inner city neighborhoods and things such as that that have improved the situation in some places. But overall, I think Balco's book certainly touches on this big problem that needs to be addressed.
And, you know, Stephen, I wanted to throw out your websites before we go. If you want to find out more about Stephen Greenhut or read more of his articles, go to humanevents.com or flashreport.org. And, again, all this information is on wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah, and check out watchdog.org, which is the Franklin Center investigative site. And anyway, that's
and this
all
is,
right, well, thanks for having
hey,
me.
Hey, thanks a lot.
It.
And this is your third time on this show, so if you want to hear more about what Stephen and Aaron and I have talked about, there are links to the two previous dates.
Yep, look at the archives. Thank you very much. We always need our updates on what's going on in the libertarian world. You have lots of fans.
Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to thank our advertisers. I do believe we've got all of our computerization up and running, maybe. Oh, wait, I lied. Are we still good?
Apparently not. Okay.
Computer's still...
I have to complain to my music subscription service, evidently.
Our computer's still on drugs. Okay.
Don't know that it's the computer.
Oh.
I don't know. But...
Are we getting help again?
Like I said, could be Homeland Security.
Yeah, you know. Stop them from helping us. Okay, we'll be right back with you folks. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM.
And we're back.
And we normally have music, but somebody's messing with us.
And, you know, road all the live long day. There you go. Okay. Sorry, I was just trying to help.
Hey, so, Bob, do we have Linda on the line, or should we bring her in right after the five-minute break?
Oh, let's bring her in now.
Well, that's your call, but she is
okay,
on the line.
Right.
She can stay till about 9:30.
Okay, I'm gonna give a little bio on Linda Lai, who, by the way, will be joining us tomorrow night at the Reading Tea Party. And we're going to talk about the Third and Fourth Amendment with Linda as well this morning. But Linda Lai is a staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California, where she focuses on free speech, open government, and privacy issues. Her current litigation includes a suit against the University of California at Davis for its use of pepper spray on student protesters and another against the city of Oakland for its crackdown on peaceful Occupy Oakland protesters. And, you know, the thing that I've pointed out many times and I find to be a real breakthrough in this movement, this peaceful revolution to take our country back, is that the Tea Party, who has been labeled many, many things in the last 4 or 5 years, has now aligned on many levels with the ACLU. And there's a time when no one ever thought that that would happen, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we all love our Constitution and want to preserve it with its original intents. So good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I'm so delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. You know, you were on Sovereign Minds Radio last weekend, and I loved your show. It was fantastic, and I know that you're going to be joining us tomorrow night. And I kind of got in contact with you because of this Salon article on the paramilitary style of our local police forces and the increase in police force across the United States, and I thought this is something perfect for Linda to weigh in on.
Oh, thank you so much. I think that's an excellent jumping-off point for the issue we initially got in touch with over drones and the City of Reading's recent decision to join Ventura County's bid to be a drone testing site. And I think there are a lot of connections. So I'm happy to start chatting unless you want to direct me with some more specific questions.
Well, you know, we'll be taking a top-of-the-hour break here in about 3.5 minutes, but maybe very quickly, you can give us your thoughts on we'll go into more depth after the top of the hour, but overall, are you concerned about the increase in paramilitary force?
Absolutely. Technology, you know, whether it's armored tanks or body armor for law enforcement or drones, technology can be used for good or for ill. But what we need to do is have a rational, open, and participatory discussion about whether the benefits really outweigh the costs. Now, we hear a lot in the name of national security. Apparently, that has justified reading our emails and monitoring all of our calls.
Yeah.
But the public really deserves nothing less than the opportunity to find out, okay, what are the purposes that we think this new technology is going to be used for? Will it only be used for that? And do we believe as a society that the privacy costs will make sense given the benefits? The answer may vary from situation to situation, but we deserve to participate in that robust debate.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, it's funny, people get hung up on the left-right thing and the politics of it, but at the end of the day, it's a huge freedom issue. Mm-hmm. For everybody.
Absolutely. And I'm delighted that we can approach this in an absolutely postpartisan way, that here are specific issues which we should all care about. We all have individual privacy rights, and that's the case no matter where you are in the political spectrum.
Exactly. And we're finding that people, are you finding that people are more interested now in learning about what their rights are than they haven't been in the past?
Well, that's the fascinating thing. As someone who works on privacy and technology, the drone debate in particular has really sparked people's outrage and imagination, and it's really galvanized people across the spectrum in a way that I find very energizing and exciting. And the thing that's also interesting is that the concerns raised by drones are the same concerns that we should have about video surveillance, about all kinds of surveillance. So if you care about the issues raised by drones, if those resonate with you, there's a host of other issues,
absolutely,
you know, including militarization of the police.
We're going to come right back with you after the top of the hour. We've got to fit in some news here. We'll be right back with Linda Lott
on KCNR Shasta Radio.
We're back from our commercial break. You are joining Hour 2 of We the People Radio with your hosts, Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and our show producer and musical savant, Bob Martin. And we're talking about the Third and Fourth Amendments today, the militarization, the paramilitary-style force of our local police forces, how it's spreading across the country.
Drones.
The destruction of our Third and Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution of the United States. And currently we have Linda Lai on the line. Linda is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Northern California. And she specifically is talking about the connection between our lack of privacy and the destruction of our Third and Fourth Amendment rights.
Thanks so much. You know,
welcome
I think
back.
There are two key. Thank you. I think there are two key connections between the militarization of the police and the drones example. One is the issue of mission creep. When the government has a new toy, they're going to use it. And so we see with SWAT teams in that fabulous article on the militarization of police that Elizabeth, you and I chatted about, that SWAT teams were intended to be for very, very high-risk, unusual situations. And what we see in use as a practical matter is that SWAT teams are being deployed for really very mundane arrest warrants to enforce things that are frankly quite trivial, like beer labeling compliance at a bar. That's not something you need, many armed individuals storming private property for. So what we see is a phenomenon of mission creep. We've certainly seen it with SWAT teams, and we know it happens with new technology as well. When the government trots out the latest gizmo and they say, oh, this will help us make our borders more safe. Well, what do we see? Customs and Border Patrol has drones. They use it to patrol the border, but documents recently released in early July show that between 2010 and 2012, there was an eightfold increase in Customs and Border Patrol loaning out their drones to other agencies. So they're using it for non-border patrol purposes. This is a classic example of mission creep. Borders today are backyards tomorrow. The second issue I think that's really connected between the militarization of the police and drones and other new surveillance technology is the budgeting process and the way in which we, the people, participate or are shut out from the decision-making process. A lot of these new forms of equipment are funded through state and often federal grants. And so what that means is it doesn't necessarily go through the same budgeting process that it would if the Redding City Council or the Shasta County Board of Supervisors were looking at its budget. It's free money to the agency. It's use it or lose it. So instead of our local elected decision makers saying, we have limited resources. Do we need this? What should we spend our precious tax dollars on? If it's free money, the law enforcement entity applies for the grant. They raise it with the Board of Supervisors or the City Council, and then the local legislative body typically just does not give it the same level of review as if it were coming out of the local coffers. So that shuts the public out of the process. It just really limits the ability of the public to participate directly in that decision to acquire the new technology.
Yeah, and I think that when the point that you made, it's funny, it's the same thing Stephen Greenhut said. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as they get all these toys, they want to use them.
Sure.
And, you know, it's terrible to think that we never grow up past that, but mm-hmm. I guess mm-hmm. it's...
Yeah. And the problem is they have to use them on us. I mean, can't they do drills?
Sure, but,
it wouldn't be as much fun.
No, but at the end of the day, you look at it and... So Linda, what are you seeing, like, okay, with the drones and the technology like that? I don't see them getting that type of technology, having it, and then only using it occasionally just for very specific purposes.
Well, I think that's a real danger, and it's why we, I look at it this way. I try to be an optimist. I think drones present a remarkable opportunity for local communities to get engaged. Right now, we have a little bit of breathing room because the process for getting a certificate of authorization from the Federal Aviation Administration to operate a drone is pretty slow, although that will change. The FAA is going to have to come up with a plan for integrating drones into domestic airspace by the end of 2015. But in between now and then, we have an opportunity to really be active at the local level. Each time we need to be... we need to have our eyes like hawks on our local law enforcement to figure out if they're thinking about acquiring a drone, and if they are, to be very, very active. I'm very proud to have been part of a campaign in Alameda County, which is the county that I live in, that wanted to be the first local law enforcement entity in California to actually acquire a drone. When we got wind of that, we mobilized a grassroots coalition, we let the press know, we contacted the Board of Supervisors, and there was a tremendous outpouring by the community telling the Board of Supervisors, whoa, you need to slow down. This is not necessarily what we need. We need a lot more information before the sheriff goes forward. What purposes will he use the drone for? What are the privacy controls? What happens to the data once it's collected? All of these questions need to be answered before we can make an informed decision about whether it even makes sense to get a drone. We completely slowed down the process. It's not really clear whether the sheriff is still going to go forward with acquiring a drone, but he certainly understands that the process needs to be very transparent, and he can't just unilaterally proceed without having safeguards in place so that we all know what are the drones going to be used for, what's going to happen to the data.
Yeah, now how do you see that progressing? Is that going to wind up being local policy? I mean, is that city, county, state? I mean,
that's an excellent question. I think it's going to happen at all levels. We're seeing, okay. Legislation introduced at the federal level. There were two bills introduced this year at the state level in Sacramento to regulate drones. Unfortunately, neither is as strong as we would like them to be. So we don't exactly know what's going to happen to that legislation, but there's certainly legislators in Sacramento are recognizing the need to address it. And I think we also all have to be active at the local level. One of the things that's really key is that there has to be a framework in place, either strict policy or strict statutes that provide a framework for using drones. And here's why. technology evolves far more rapidly than the Constitution. So basically, the process of making constitutional law in the courts is very slow. There were years during which law enforcement was using GPS devices, installing them on people's cars without getting a warrant, and only last year did the Supreme Court finally weigh in and say, no, you can't do that. So we can't rely, while I believe firmly that the Fourth Amendment and its protection against unreasonable searches and seizures means that the police should not be using drones without a warrant to fly over my backyard, it's going to be a while before we get clear rulings from the court saying that. So before that happens, we need to have clear guidelines in place that our elected leaders write and put into place to protect our privacy.
You know, I had a conversation with my mother when this drone issue came up. She surprised me a little bit by her thoughts about it, but she didn't see a problem with them because if it meant that it was going to keep us safe, then we should use them. And I said, well, what do you feel about your Fourth Amendment rights? And how would you feel if some level of law enforcement decided to come to your home and go through your home and search it because they thought maybe you had something to hide? And she said, well, I would be okay with that because if I'm not doing anything wrong and I've got nothing to hide, what's the problem? Well, here's the problem. I seriously doubt that if some level of law enforcement showed up at your front doorstep, they're not going to ring the bell and say, good afternoon, ma'am.
Yeah.
How are you today? We were wondering if we might be able to come in and search your home to make sure that you're safe. Would that be all right with you this afternoon?
Yeah, no kidding.
Generally, what they're going to do is bust your door down with their guns drawn.
Yeah,
and if your dog barks, they're going to shoot it.
Well, since you brought it up, I'm asking Linda too, because I ask everybody. You know, in Boston, when after the bombing, and they were looking for what's his face, the brother, and they were pulling people out of their houses. What? I mean, were there people who said, you know, no thank you? And if so, what happened to them? Do you have any other intel on what happened to just the regular folks on the street?
There are exceptions for under the Fourth Amendment for what's called the hot pursuit. If there's a dangerous felon fleeing, the police, you know, for instance, can... So say the dangerous felon runs from the scene, leaps over a fence into someone's backyard, the police can also pursue that person because of the emergency nature of the situation. So the Fourth Amendment allows for that sort of situation. Now, for them to go beyond the scope of just, like, running through the backyard to look for the person and then to start rummaging through someone's house and personal belongings would be a quite different issue. But there are the constitutional doctrine does recognize an exception for emergency-type situations when you are in pursuit of someone who presents a danger to the public.
Okay, because they were pulling people out of their house. Here were people in, you could tell they weren't dressed for going anywhere. Mm-hmm. They were at home doing stuff. And they were pulled out and taken down on the sidewalk with their hands over their head while the police ran into their houses. And those were films from neighbors.
That part seems a little bit alarming in terms of going beyond the scope of what's really necessary in order to, obviously running through the back of a backyard, chasing someone the suspect that you saw going there, that makes sense. But the invasiveness of that approach, I think the goal could have been accomplished without being as intrusive or scaring the bejesus out of those poor people.
Yeah, they did it to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And at the time when I was watching some of these videos shot by neighbors, looking out there, I thought, God, this is freaky. Mm-hmm. Here they're looking out of their windows, you know, filming their neighbors being dragged out by the police so that they can go in their house and search. And I'm thinking, okay, so if those people weren't home, are they going to break the door down and go in?
Sure.
And then when you come back from your vacation or wherever you were, the grocery, you know, your door's hanging off the hinges, do we get to do that?
And also, when they do damage to your personal property in their pursuit of whatever
that's
they're pursuing,
that's kind of tough luck too, huh?
Is it SOL for you, or do they cover the cost of repairs?
That's a secret insider term, SOL, actually.
To lawyers, that means statute of limitations. But
what I meant.
That is outstanding. Outstanding. Definitely statute of limitations. ROR. Okay. So what about all that? Where does that all fit?
I think where that fits is often there are a number of tools we have Some are more effective than others, but there are a number of tools we have to keep our government accountable when they do things that look like overreach. Sometimes it's a lawsuit for, you know, suing for damages. Sometimes it's some kind of administrative claim. And sometimes it's making our elected leaders hear us, showing up at public meetings, and, you know, voicing our concerns, and going to the ballot box. So I think and writing letters to the editor, doing what you do, having a talk show radio and promoting discussion. I think these are all important ways of standing up when we see government overreach.
And what do you see from just, you know, average people out there? Are people alarmed by these things? Are they good with it? Where are the folks that you talk to, especially down like in the Bay Area?
I think you see a real range, and you know what you mentioned about your mother's mm-hmm. Reaction to the drones. I think is a very common one. I don't have anything to hide, but I think if we really drill down on that, if we talk about the level of surveillance that's happening, we need to really think through carefully whether we want to surrender all of our personal private information to the government. I may have, you know, I don't violate the law. I have nothing to hide in that sense, but I have at home confidential medical files about certain medical conditions. I don't want the government knowing about that. In addition, when the government accumulates vast amount of data, things that look really innocent can be twisted. I mean, speaking of the Boston bombing situation, I own a pressure cooker because it's a really good way of cooking lentils.
Oh, we've gone right to pressure cooker.
and I actually had to buy a new one recently because my old one burned. And my fiance said, I don't think we should order that online because then the government's going to
think
we're
terrorists. And tell me, is that just stupid? How sad is that?
God.
How sad is that?
That is just, all right, we've gone somewhere that we like, actually. That's just, we had an incident up here right after that. Some lady left her pressure cooker on the sidewalk down in Red Bluff. Sleepy little town of Red Bluff, she left it out on the sidewalk by one of the stores, and oh my gosh, we had to roll out all the big guns there.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, she ultimately just really had a pressure cooker. Imagine that. we're going to be right back with Linda. We've got to thank our advertisers here. We've found some music for you folks. We're in a music-free zone, but we'll be back. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM.
Time is really wasted.
Radio, chatting and streaming live worldwide at wethepeopleradio.us. We're with Linda Lai, staff attorney for the ACLU. We're talking about drones, home invasions by paramilitary police forces, Third and Fourth Amendments. And Linda, we know that you have to wrap it up at 9:30, so where would you like to go in the last 5 minutes?
I just wanted to say I'm so excited to be here, and I'm really excited to talking to the Tea Party live and in person tomorrow
night. Yeah, that's
going
to be fantastic.
So thank you so much for the opportunity. I guess I think when it comes to new technology, again, there are lots of benefits. We all love, you know, reading the news on the internet, the convenience of being able to shop on the internet. These are wonderful things, but they can also become tools for surveillance. So it's not, I don't think that we can just have a blanket reaction that, you know, technology or drones necessarily a bad thing. There may be some beneficial uses, for example, monitoring hotspots and responding to a fire, identifying a potential, if there's a bomb, going in and monitoring it to see how we can explode it in a way that keeps people safe. That's wonderful, but what we should not be taken in by is the rhetoric and the hype. Just because the government says it's going to make us safer doesn't mean that we should give them carte blanche. They should not just get a blank check to do whatever they want with it, because we know from all of the Snowden revelations that they're doing a lot of the things in the name of national security that if they had to tell us about, people wouldn't be so happy. So I think the same thing applies equally to drones, and it's a great opportunity and important responsibility for us to be active and engaged, to keep an eye out on the government and to participate, because that's our right.
And you know,
and it's a great opportunity.
And Linda, it's funny how it always comes back to that, because no matter what issue we're discussing, we always circle back to you need to be aware, involved, and engaged as a citizen of a free country, and especially
absolutely.
At the local level. Where
absolutely,
you can absolutely. Affect change.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, you're going to have some hot tips for folks tomorrow?
I'm sorry?
Tomorrow night. Do you have hot tips for the folks? Oh, and are you meeting with City Council? Did that ever pull itself together?
I am meeting with a few people individually, and folks have been really gracious about trying to make schedule time on their busy schedules. So I just want to share information with them about the decision-making process when we, when our local civilian elected leaders approve a drone. It's not simple. There have to be good privacy protections in place. There's something called fair information practice principles about responsible ways for using personal data. Drones have the potential to be used for warrantless mass surveillance. And that is not something that's acceptable on a sort of personal level, a policy level, a constitutional level. So there are, when our elected leaders say, sure, we can become a drone testing site, they should be drilling down a lot more, because there are a lot more questions that need to be asked. For what purpose is the drone going to be used? And what's going to happen to the data once it's collected? Will I have a right to see data about myself? Is the data going to be handed off to law enforcement to then go sort of comb through and circulate? Is the data going to just be set free for anyone who's curious about what plants I'm growing in my backyard? Mm-hmm. I'm a big native plant person. I just put in a bunch of plants recently, but it's really not anyone's business. My yard is also really tidy. It's really not tidy right now. I don't want anyone else mm-hmm. taking a look at it. One of the things that's really different about drones from aerial forms of surveillance is the surreptitiousness. If I'm enjoying a sunny afternoon in my backyard, say sunbathing nude, I don't know if a drone is flying overhead
sure.
and capturing images of me naked in my backyard. If there's a helicopter, I can grab a robe and protect my privacy. But if there's a drone, it's a very different calculus.
Mm-hmm. And
what happens to the data is super important.
Well, what about the folks that say, well, we already have Google Earth, so you can already zoom in on somebody's
yard.
Yeah,
but I don't think Google Earth
well,
is...
I don't either,
yeah.
But what would be your...
It's not in real time.
Yeah. I mean, those are... I don't know how often they take those pictures, but what's the difference? What would be the distinction that you would make?
The difference is the comprehensiveness of the surveillance, exactly as you guys just said, the Google Street View. Just a snapshot in time. It's not monitoring constantly what I'm doing. The other issue is that Google's been sued for Street View. There are some
really?
Instances where they, in some instances, they, when their cars went driving around, they ended up picking up, capturing information about people's routers and internet networks.
I'm sure.
So that's not necessarily, that's an example of, yes, there are similarities to Google Street View, and they're problematic, and there are differences that make drones even more problematic than Google Street View.
Interesting. And because Google Street View does it use the cameras at the intersections and things like that? Is anything tied into that yet?
Well, it's interesting you say this. So I think my understanding of Google Street View is that they have a car that runs up and down. But there are also obviously many cities and private entities that have video surveillance, closed-circuit television. The city of Oakland recently approved something called the domain awareness situation, where it received federal Homeland Security grant funding. Again, we go back to the federal funding. And it allows the Port of Oakland to connect up all of the different surveillance systems, not only in the port, but also in the city of Oakland, so that you can have all of the automated license plate readers connecting up to the CCTV, and then you have advanced analytics with, all kinds of things, potentially facial recognition software. this will eventually, by aggregating the data, it's not just a point in time, it's not just the information of, you know, I crossed the street of this intersection at X time, but it's by linking all of those surveillance systems together, we get very comprehensive pictures of where each of us goes, who we see, what we do, when we do it. That's very, very detailed personal information that's sensitive and that the government shouldn't be tracking.
They shouldn't be doing a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing is,
too numerous to list.
Yeah, and if anybody's paying attention at all, they have to know that given an inch, the government will take a mile.
And charge you for it.
And charge you for it, coming and going. But to think that anything is going to be used with discretion and used appropriately, I mean, that's just naive.
So my approach is, you know, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah, what is it? It's on the bottom of all my emails. In God we trust, all others we question.
Exactly.
Excellent. Yeah, there's quite a bit. And is this giving you guys lots of work? I don't know how the ACLU actually operates, but I would imagine this is a target-rich environment, as they say.
It absolutely is. And I think that, again, you know, there are different tools we have in our toolbox. Some of it is advocacy. And, you know, that goes from the local, state to the federal level. And then some of it is litigation. You know, it just depends. A lot of it is public education, too. I think exactly what you guys are doing is so critical.
Do you find that, because I did have somebody call and was concerned, you know, what are we doing with the ACLU at our meeting? That's going to, I mean, they're not on our team.
I think
team.
It's fantastic.
They're not on our team. And I was like, well.
Yeah, they are.
Really, what team are we on?
Yeah,
because
there isn't a team.
We should be on the, you know, on the information team.
On the team of the people?
So, but it's interesting Absolutely. Because people have really hard mm-hmm. lines drawn about some of these things. And I'm just wondering from your end, do you see a lot of that kind of
What do you mean you're going to talk to the Tea Party?
Yeah, do you see it kind of blurring and morphing?
My colleagues are so excited that I'm going
nice.
To talk to the Tea Party.
Nice.
So we just love reaching out across the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. The ACLU mm-hmm. is actually a nonpartisan organization. I think we're often perceived
well, and so,
not
and
that
really,
way.
So is the Tea Party.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And yet we've all been pigeonholed.
Mm-hmm. and I think this just, you know, speaks tremendously to both of our organizations' ability to rise above the immediate politics framework mm-hmm. and look at the issues, what matters.
I mean, we the people really sums it up because that's, at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Absolutely.
That is awesome.
I'm so excited to be coming and seeing
yes.
you in person tomorrow.
It will be
Thank
fun.
You so much for giving me this opportunity.
And thank you for jumping on board with us this morning on such short notice. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And don't forget to go to wethepeopleradio.us to check out everything about Linda Lai.
Exactly. And so the Tea Party is in Reading tomorrow night. Destiny Fellowship Church, 2570 South Bonneview.
6 o'clock
p.m.
sharp.
We meet every week. So make it tomorrow and you'll hear more from Linda. Thanks, Linda. We'll let you get to your 10 o'clock thing.
Great.
Whatever it is you're supposed to do. I hope it's a fun thing.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
And on
Bye-bye.
That and on that uninformed note, since I didn't know what her thing was, we're going to take a really quick break here. We'll come back. Thank our advertisers a little bit here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight. Roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight.
we're back. Hey, now's the time to call, 530-605-4567. We're going to do a little open mic here and chit-chat for the remainder of the show. So if you've got anything you want to put out there on the airwaves, call now or forever hold your peace.
I just...
Let's do open lines, okay? Open mic's a bad idea.
Oh, I mean open lines. You know what I meant.
What does open mic mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means like when I forget to turn the mic off between breaks and they can hear what we're saying.
Yeah. Like the very first show we had. I think it was our very first show.
Yeah.
And at the end of the thing, there was a guy that I was like, okay, we only have 30 seconds and we were all new and we didn't know how to get people off the air. And the guy kept talking and it ended and I'm like, what part of we only have 1 minute is the guy not clear about? Bob's like, no, the microphones are still on. Like, oh, oops. Yeah. He probably doesn't listen to us anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
But it was 3 years ago, maybe.
Sure.
Maybe he can cut me some slack.
Yeah, we were new.
That was pretty funny.
Okay, I take no responsibility for that. I was not involved with the program at that.
You were not. That's right. It was Chandler back then.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, and he looked didn't want to throw him under the bus, but okay.
It wasn't him. It was me. Right?
It wasn't. It was just. It was all of us. You know, we were getting our feet wet and figuring out our groove thing.
Oh, that was your baptism by fire. Your very first show.
Yeah.
Well, and
then
we used to have. Remember, in the old days, the guests were still. Their microphones were still on.
Oh, the way our original setup in here. That's right.
So during the commercial,
mics were not killed automatically during the commercial break.
Yeah, they could still hear us.
Yeah.
But we couldn't hear them, so they're like, they were talking to us.
You know, we were talking
bad deal.
Off the air about where We the People Radio fits in local conservative talk shows if you go online, and we're right up there now.
Yeah, if you go to TuneIn. Is it Tuned In?
TuneIn, 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 the phone app. It's also a website. Just search for We the People, or
it has all our archives
or
and stuff.
Go to conservative talk shows, and we're pretty high up there.
You know,
especially for a locally originated show,
right?
We're right up there with the syndicated shows.
And you know what's funny is that there are people that ask me, "Well, how did you get into radio? I mean, did you go to school for that?" And I got to tell you, I laugh.
Somebody
head
just
off.
Fell out of their chair howling.
Yeah, lots of people are laughing out there. You can't hear them. But Aaron and I are volunteers. You know, this is a volunteer effort on behalf of conservative values in the U.S. Constitution. So, you know, we pull our guests together and we have Robert Exter, who does a fantastic job with our website every single week. He puts that page up and, you know, spends quite a bit of time on it. So I want to give a big thank you to Robert Exter. And Bob Martin, of course. And so, you know, we volunteer. This is doing our part for the movement.
Exactly. Hey, there's a Fire Fee Town Hall. I just was thinking about this. For those people, can I make this happen? Can I make this happen swiftly and handily here while we're winging it?
Well, you know, the Fire Fee... affecting 800,000 homeowners across the state of California.
Yeah, Monday there's a teletown hall, so it's a telephone town hall, literally, with George Runner, and it Jim Nielsen's office, Senator Nielsen's office, has been promoting it, but it's residents of Butte, Glen, Lassen, Modoc, Plumas, Siskiyou, Shasta, and Tehama counties. So basically, northern, you know, the Northern California area. Anybody who wants to participate. Needs to register 24 hours in advance. I'd love to tell you what time the call is, but it's like buried down in this stupid article. Let me give you the phone number while I find the actual time of the call. It's 916-445-3032.
And while you're looking for the time, I just wanted to say that George Runner is one of five elected individuals that sits on the California Board of Equalization Board. And he's a fantastic person, actually. He has come to the Tea Party meeting, and he's funny, and he's definitely on the side of the people. I mean, you know when somebody's campaigning, and you know when they mean what they say, and I believe he means what he says. And he definitely is fighting for the people on this fire fee. So if you can tune into that telephone town hall, I highly encourage you to do that.
It's kind of tough because we just told them to come to the Tea Party tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. But if you're not at the Tea Party tomorrow night at 6 o'clock.
Or if you're anywhere else in the state of California listening and you don't live in Redding.
Yeah, jump on.
Jump on to that.
So it's Monday night. It's a teletown hall. It starts at 6 p.m. For the Northern California counties. The phone number again is 916-445-3032. So that's kind of a cool opportunity.
It is.
It's a thing that's going to affect a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they've sent out refunds, and I'm a little fuzzy on where we are with this.
You know, I am
too. They were supposed to bill them like 3 times in 6 months for 2011.
Everything retroactive, of course. You know, most taxes now that are passing through our legislature, state, or otherwise are becoming retroactive. It's not enough to say you're going to start paying a tax next year on such and such. Now they are, you're going to pay for next year, last year, and the year before that. So sorry.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense because that's the way we do everything.
Mm-hmm. Backwards.
Uh-huh. So anyway, I'll give out the number one more time, 916-445-3032, and I would call today to register for that teletown hall. It's tomorrow night at 6.
Because mark my words, remember that I said this, right?
You should say that with an accent of some kind.
I'm not good with accents.
Oh, man.
I don't do voices.
You don't?
No, I used to do...
Not even at home in the shower, you know, like singing, like bad singing?
No.
Really?
I don't even do that. Cause
mark
the dog,
my words.
Because the dog starts to howl when I do that. So anyway, you know, right now that fire fee is just affecting people that live in state responsibility areas where Cal Fire, you know, jumps out there and helps save your home. But see, mark my words, they're gonna extend that to people in metropolitan areas and inside city limits too, because Cal Fire frequently jumps in on board and assists local fire departments in town. So it will come to everyone. You watch.
Come into a town near you. Lovely.
It won't just be, you know, people living in the outskirts.
Well, you want to hear some more legislative funness?
Absolutely.
That you won't hear?
Absolutely.
Which is unfortunate that you won't hear it. But let's see. This was on Thursday. They passed an amendment to the House Energy and Water Appropriations. I told you there's a lot of fun stuff going on mm-hmm. in appropriations mm-hmm. these days.
Because they fund things, folks.
Uh-huh.
Or defund them, as the case may
be. That's why control of the House is super important.
Yeah.
I mean, people think, well, they're not doing anything.
Yeah, they
you
are.
Know? Well, there's some stuff happening. You just might not be hearing about it. So they passed an amendment in the House Energy and Water Appropriations providing relief to farms, ranches, and forestry by ending excessive regulatory overreach. The Clean Water Act exempts routine agricultural work such as plowing, harvesting, and maintenance of drainage ditches from permitting requirements.
Nice.
Super huge. However, the overzealous federal agencies had interpreted other portions of the act to require cumbersome and expensive permits. We've done tons of shows on that. Which often prevent otherwise normal agricultural work. So this eliminates funding for regulation of activities identified as exempt in the CWA.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't spend money to mm-hmm. enforce it. And bottom line is they were overreaching anyway.
Well, and again, anybody that lives in the beautiful rural or outskirt areas of California, if you are involved in any one of our natural resource industries, you know how difficult it is to get beyond all of the various state and federal agencies and the bureaucratic mess.
Just doing stuff, you know, planting mm-hmm. wheat and you're, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. oh, wait a minute, you had like a little ditch in your deal there and mm-hmm. water pooled up and it's a wetlands
yeah.
and we all know the stupidity of that.
And you were saying something about the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, we're going to get to that one too. Here's, in one instance, a Northern California family farm planned to convert fields that were under ditch irrigation to piped irrigation. They were blocked when a federal agency claimed that the work would negatively impact the Sacramento River. So, you know, the environmentalists out there, and I mean, I consider farmers and ranchers environmentalists.
Well, they're like, the true environmentalists.
Yeah, I mean, environmentalism, the idea is mm-hmm. actually kind of a good idea, but mm-hmm. they seem to have turned into bad guys.
Well, you have
so people are going, well, they shouldn't screw up the Sacramento River. Well, you want to hear the fact of it here. The agency ignored the fact that the fields drained through a man-made ditch to a man-made stock pond, meaning places, you know, where their cattle and stuff could drink. Located about 6 miles from the Sacramento River, turning a one-day, $2,500 project into a multi-year legal fight that cost the family over...
Drum roll, please.
Uh-huh. $100,000.
Unbelievable.
So $2,500 just to, you know, make this little change. Nope, $100,000 in years of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we've gone someplace stupid.
Okay, here's the thing. Let's talk about true environmentalism. Who knows the land better than someone who is a multi-generational family member tending the fields, taking care of cattle, growing crops. When you make your living off of the land, you certainly aren't going to strip it and rape it and pillage it, because you are completely, you're making your living off of that land.
Sure.
So obviously you're going to care for it in the best way possible. Now, the environmentalists that belong to organizations and apply for federal funding to then turn around and sue agencies, those folks usually don't live off the land. They're living in the cities. They're living, they don't live the life that they claim they're trying to preserve.
And that is a huge, huge problem.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Let's see. Here we have... here we have Bob giving us the high sign. Sorry, Bob. I didn't see the high sign there out of the corner of my eye.
That's okay. It's open mic Sunday.
But he's got some weird L lined up. No? Maybe?
Maybe.
I was kind of excited there for a second. All righty, folks. We're going to be kicking Elizabeth's feet up from under her. Be right back with you. 2 minutes. We the People Radio here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
I bet it was time to bring back a forgotten favorite that's suddenly relevant again. Rhythm Heritage with the theme from SWAT.
Oh, nice.
Recently, with a plain and simple dream, wanna infiltrate some third world place and topple their regime. Those men in black with their mansion suitcases, where everything's on a need-to-know basis. Agents got that swagger, everyone's so cloak and dagger. I'm feeling nervous, but I'm really kind of wishing for an undercover mission. That's when the red alert came on the radio, and I put my earpiece on. Got my dark sunglasses on, and I had my weapon drawn. So I get my handcuffs, my cyanide pills, my classified dossier. Tapping the phones like, yeah. Shredding the files like, yeah. I memorized all the enemy spies. I gotta neutralize today. Yeah, it's a party in the CIA.
That was fantastic. I'm watching the words on that song on Bob's screen. That was fantastic. Who was that?
Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, yeah, we're Weird Al.
Spoofing Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus.
Okay.
Party in the CIA there.
There you go. Cyanide pills and all that.
All the enemy spies I have to neutralize today.
Yeah, I like that guy. You know, besides the fact that he's clever and all that, when he sings that stuff, you can actually understand the words.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a lot of these guys, they do these spoofs, and it's great as long as you're reading it, but you can't understand what they say. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, kudos to Weird Al.
Hey, so here's something interesting out of the Washington Post. Food stamp participation. Now, we know that the Bush administration ended in 2008, and the Obama administration began in 2009, correct?
Check.
Right. Okay, since 2008, food stamp participation has increased at an annual rate of roughly 13%. Now, why would that be if things are good?
because
the advertising campaign's working?
Because smart is stupid and up is down. And
hey, so, and by state, there's a map that shows 2012 participation in SNAP, which is the food stamp program. And the states that have had the highest participation, we're talking upwards of 25%. That's 25% of their population. Oregon, New Mexico, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Washington, D.C.
Huh.
25% of their population on food stamps.
And yet, you know, there are all sorts of articles out now and reports out that the people, you know, actually making money inside the Washington, D.C., not just the political people, but the lobbyists and different folks there, that business is booming. But not all the way. Did you see that there was
it's not trickling down.
Well, it kind of made me laugh because there was a thing on the other day. They want to bring Walmart to Washington, D.C. because they have just, you know, serious poverty going on in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And the city council wants to make Walmart pay 12-something an hour instead of 8-something an hour.
And Walmart said, sorry, we're not coming
Walmart's
to your town.
Like, yeah, okay. we'll dig a hole for something else.
Yeah, probably. we're not coming.
Yeah, and they waited until Walmart already had 3 stores under construction before they spring this on them. Then they accuse Walmart of holding a gun to their head.
Isn't it funny? It doesn't, you know, it just doesn't get any richer than that. This mm-hmm. this period of history will go down. They'll write whole books about it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be like when the world went mad.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
The insanity of it all.
Okay, so you're ready for one more land
yes.
update,
please?
Since we really don't do these that often, but it was kind of a watershed week, as it pun intended,
so to speak.
free the watershed.
Well done.
Okay, huge win today. This was on Wednesday the 10th, so this was the day previous. There was an amendment put through that, and it was done on a voice vote. Army Corps of Engineers is not allowed to spend money to regulate farmers for normal farming, silviculture, ranching activities such as plowing, seeding, cultivating, minor drainage, harvesting for the production of food, fiber, and forest products, or upland soil and water conservation practices. Now, as you hear that list, you're like, well, isn't that what farmers do? Yes, and that's mm-hmm. what they haven't been able to do.
Right.
They've been just micromanaged, overregulated, and then part B of that is they cannot, the Army Corps will be, if this amendment goes through in their appropriation, will be prevented from regulating farmers on the purpose of construction maintenance for farmer stock ponds, irrigation ditches, and the maintenance of drainage.
Hmm.
So kind of connected to the other one.
Yeah.
It is interesting, though, in one of the notes, the Army Corps said this could result in changes to the status and condition of navigable waters, which could influence things such as commerce, recreation, use, and transportation.
Like, wow.
Really? Do we have a lot of commerce, recreation, use, and transportation on farms? You know? Navigable waters?
Yeah,
I haven't seen any navigable waters on a farm.
Doesn't that mean that
these days
a boat should be able to float down it?
Well, you know, that's kind of what we all thought, and that, of course, has not worked out, which
no.
is where the... What is it? How does that joke go? And then the fight started.
And here's this whole thing. I mean, we're watching our healthy food sources shrivel up and die right before our very eyes. We all know that there's a huge portion of our food coming from other countries, China, for instance, who doesn't have an FDA and they have no standards. And then we've got all the genetically modified foods. We've got Monsanto, you know, pretty much running the show, and you know, people are aware of that. They know that their food sources are not good and healthy, and yet we're allowing these agencies to destroy the ability to grow our own healthy food by taking out the farmers and the ranchers and fining them for doing what they've been doing for hundreds of years successfully and in a healthy way and maintaining the quality of the land.
Yeah, it's just,
I mean, it's just, there's your insanity.
Yeah, it's stupid. We're literally cutting off our nose to spite our face.
And it's even gone beyond that. I mean, it's beyond making sense now.
Well,
seriously.
I do think that people have gotten sick of it. And that now I think our legislative bodies are starting to look at how can they make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got
well,
all
they
these
need to start by cutting off the grant funding to these environmental agents or these environmental groups that take our taxpayer funded grants
and
then turn around and sue the agencies. They sue the state agencies and say, you need to take these farmers out because they're not doing this the way we think they should do it, and we're using taxpayer dollars
right.
to sue you to make sure that they don't farm.
And no science. Make sure to bring up science.
And the problem is most people don't know what's going on.
One last quick thing. Okay, all the trucks that they're taking off the road, right?
AB 32.
Yeah, taking all these trucks off the road because they're polluting and all that, so they take these
mm-hmm.
engines and they knock a hole in them. Yeah, did you know that those holes were being filled in, bonded over, and sold overseas? So these same engines that are not allowed to work in California will be on the gray market in Asia. Lovely.
Nice. Next week, don't tune in.
We the People Radio.
No, don't tune in.
I know.
Wraps another week.
I'm trying to wrap it up too quickly here. WeThePeopleRadio.us or go to We The People Radio on Facebook and like us. Go there or be square.
Yeah, and if you don't like us anyway.
All right, outstanding.
Or we'll drone you.
Outstanding job, Aaron and Elizabeth, and the Don Shulman
and
Show
Bob.
Is next. Thank you. Here at KCNR, Shasta, Redding.